Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is award-winning author, artist, and illustrator, Peter Cooper. And we're talking about his new book, Insectopolis, A Natural History. Peter, I hesitate to say this, but welcome back to the show after decades.
It's a long, long road to welcome.
It's amazing. I'm so glad you get a chance to talk again. Now, I got to ask you, does your sister have a PhD in entomology?
No.
Okay.
That's actually, the characters were, the main one is based on Jessica Ware, who is at the American Museum of Natural History, and dragonflies. She's a dragonfly expert.
Is this book based on an actual exhibition?
Well, it's very meta because I, in 2020, February of 2020, I was informed that I had gotten a fellowship at the New York Public Library, the Coleman Fellowship, and that was before COVID had hit.
Oh, God.
I arrived at the library, and it was closed to the public. The fellowship almost didn't happen. And then the deal is you get an office with 14 other people, writers, historians, poets, and it's supposed to be a big interaction. And then while everybody's there, they use the library's environment and resources to work on their project. And I proposed I was going to do a history of insects and the people who study them, but I had no idea how I was going to contextualize that. So generally, you know, figured a direction, and I'm wandering around the library. And in fact, they told all the people that got in the fellowship that they did not have to come in because of COVID. We had to be in our offices. The only time we could be in around without masks was in our offices. And all the interaction that was supposed to normally happen with this fellowship was they put the kibosh on that. So I was like ready to cry, like, oh, great.
Oh my God,
this amazing thing, right in time for that. And so I was wandering around the library, and it was like this ghost town. And there was just, you know, an occasional somebody sweeping up, and you could find a librarian. You know, you had to ask for something, and then they handed it to you at a distance, and everybody's wearing masks. But it suddenly dawned upon me that the environment was perfect, a perfect setup for my story, and that I would use the library as this backdrop. And furthermore, it was very post-apocalyptic. So I would just say, like, oh, people are not here, and I'm going to it's as if insects have taken over, and that I'm going to pretend that there's an exhibition here, because in fact they were working on the treasure show for the library, but they were not able to put it up in time before COVID hit. And so they had all these glass cases in a big beautiful room.
Wow.
that were not filled with anything. And I slowly made my way around the library and got access to every room. And if I wasn't given access, I just sort of like not push the door open and there'd be nobody there. And I walked into the president's office, for example, and I, you know, went everywhere, including underground where they used to store the books under Bryant Park, which is a huge park behind the library.
Wow.
It's an underground facility that somebody told me about. Anyway, I decided I'm going to pretend that there's an exhibition at the library. Each room is dedicated to a different insect, and they will then come in themselves, fly around the library, talk to each other, and look at these exhibitions, and that's how the story will unfold. But then in a very meta moment, when the fellowship ended after a year, I was asked if I wanted to have an exhibition at the library.
Oh, my God.
And I had a six-month exhibition there in two of the hallways where the drawings that I had started to work on in that year were then blown up on the walls. And you can find this in the libraries. If you look under intersects, because that's what I was calling my book at the time, that because I thought it was so clever because it had the word insect in it, in the word intersects, but I discovered that if you look for intersect on websites, you came up with some other things that were unrelated to insects. Anyway, I ended up with this this show, and I worked it into the book at one point. When the monarch butterfly flies upstairs, it actually goes into photographs of my show.
Peter, first of all, I think you must be the 300th artist I've interviewed about a COVID project. And for all the horrible things that COVID did, it generated an enormous amount of art, which is just amazing to look at the effects of that horrible plague. But secondly, do you have a real passion for insects? Because what amazed me about this book is these are all actual insects, and there are millions of them in this book. And being a nerd, being a natural history nerd like myself, you know, of course, I'm sitting there going, oh, this is this. And there's so much for people who haven't picked up this book yet. First of all, pick it up. It's visually stunning. But it's also a complete evolutionary history of insects and then humans' interactions with insects. Where's the passion? Was that always there with you?
Well, it started when I was four.
That picture of you with the butterfly?
Yeah.
The moth. It was a Cecropia moth.
It was a Cecropia, yeah. That was me age 9. At age 4 in New Jersey, it happened to be, I think it was Brood 11 in 1963.
Oh, God.
Out by the millions. And where a lot of people would look at, you know, the cicadas are just like a horror show of like creepy crawlies on every tree, and the sound is that kind of science fiction UFO sound that they make. To me, that was just heaven. I ran up to the tree and I was just so excited by all that life. And I'm not a believer in talent. I do believe, however, that some people are more visually inclined and some people are better, say, at musical instruments or math or whatever it may be. So I was definitely visually inclined, and insects really checked that box in a very big way. And seeing the praying mantis in the garden, and just all the things that, you know, the level of abundance was just mind-blowing to me. And I decided I wanted to be an entomologist. And I have one of those golden books on butterflies.
Oh, yeah. I still have mine.
And I still have mine. And, in fact, I have the one that I wrote my name in when I was, you know, 4. And it's all the pages are falling out. And I have it sitting by my desk as kind of a talisman to remind me of where I came from. And that, you know, I poured through that book, you know, to the point where all the pages were falling out. And I had a little plaque on my desk that my father had printed up that said Peter Cooper, entomologist.
Oh, wow.
And I was headed in that direction until I, you know, saw a copy of Jack Kirby and Stanley's Thor and Spider-Man. And I just was like, wait a minute. There's more going on here. Abundant.
Damn that Jack Kirby, man. All that dramatic foreshortening. Oh.
No, but the good news is I had a point. I kept being interested in insects and I collected them.
Yep.
And I raised the Cecropia moth. It's in the picture in my author photo in my book was one that I had raised.
Wow.
I of course also, you know, sadly, as any collector, as I was killing insects, which I photograph them and I enjoy seeing them at all. I realized that I could bring that in to my work and have this two-part thing. And it was it's almost silly that it wasn't so obvious. But when it struck me, and it struck me in a previous graphic novel called Ruins, and I guess you could say it struck me when I adapted Kafka's Metamorphosis. I think I probably had more empathy for Gregor Samsa from all my enthusiasm for insects, and the detailing on drawing the beetle was probably a little more particular because I really knew what beetles looked like and wanted to draw that. But in my book Ruins, one of the characters is an entomologist who moves to Mexico. And in that story, I also wove in the monarch's migration from Canada to Mexico, which was coming from the information I got from my wife and daughter. And I lived in Oaxaca, Mexico for 2 years in 2006 to 2008. And my daughter and I raised monarch butterflies there because they were quite abundant. And then to fulfill what, you know, was one of those bucket list things, we went to Michoacán
okay.
and went and visited the Monarch Reserve, where they come by the millions.
Wow.
So I wove that into the story of this book, Ruins. But then Insectopolis is really just like the full-on...
Oh, my God.
You know, now I get to look into dung beetles and dragonflies.
Oh, and it's so obvious that you're having so much fun while you're doing so much hard work, too.
The hard work of it almost didn't feel like, you know... It wasn't hard.
Okay, beep, beep, beep. The detail in this book is beautiful, but it has to have been just mind-bogglingly hard. I just had this vision of you working on this. I mean, any one page.
True. I mean, it took me almost 5 years.
I was going to say, this is a work of obsession.
It was. But, you know, being an obsession, it was something that to get up in the morning and know that I was going to go to my studio and be drawing insects was sort of, you know, I got to embrace
wow.
you know, the second biggest passion while doing the first biggest passion to get there. So that, you know, doing comics and then studying the entomologist, and the whole book had this ongoing quality of kismet where I would be looking into one thing and, you know, going down one rabbit hole, then that would start something else. And I had illustrated Alice in Wonderland, for example.
Yep.
And then, you know, I picked up on little bits and pieces of quoting Alice in Wonderland. I was working on a chapter with Nabokov. I knew that he mm-hmm. had studied the blues. Yeah. And had made these amazing discoveries about them. And he was at Harvard, and I'm teaching at Harvard, and that I was actually able to see his collection there.
Oh, man.
I kept on, you know, not only coming upon that, but making the bigger discovery that entomologists are very much like comic book fans.
They are.
I checked this with a few of them, like I'm not going too far in saying this, that I think the big connection is that comics were always considered low art, and entomology was all considered, certainly among many circles in science, low science.
Yep.
So like E.O. Wilson was fighting with James Watson over field study versus everything being in the lab, say. And that there was a lot of, when I reached out to an entomologist and said, hey, I'm working on this book and I'm doing a chapter on ants, would you mind looking at it? I could go to the top person in the field,
oh, wow.
and they would immediately respond. So every chapter is vetted by the highest level of entomologists I could find on Odonata, that's dragonflies,
mm-hmm.
or myrmecology, or any of these things. And
Wilson's huge in myrmecology.
He is the guy, and I talked. He died while I was working on this project.
Oh, man, you got to talk to him?
I did not.
It was
one of the sad moments was I sent him pages, and I reached out through a connection I had at Harvard. And but the next best thing was that one of his students, who has written several books on ants, Mark Moffitt,
mm-hmm.
Spoke to me, you know, went over my chapter. And I showed every chapter to multiple entomologists because I got slightly different opinions on things, and it's really, you know, the process was, of course, I was Googling things and you know, reading read stacks of books, but I Googled the lac bug,
yes,
and I started working on the chapter, and then an entomologist said that's not a lac bug, even though on Google it says lac bug in big bold letters and shows that picture. And I even listened to talks on lac bugs where people showed this image and then found out that Google was wrong and
wow.
everybody was being misinformed. I mean, many people were making the same mistake. And it was a very important lesson in triple checking my facts, but it also opened the door on some storytelling where I have I had already drawn these pages. I didn't want to throw them out. So I just made the drawing of the bug that I drew, which was a beetle, actually, make it say, yeah, I'm constantly being mistaken for a black bug, and I'm not one. I don't even know exactly what I am. And so that was the kind of things that you stumble on. And I was starting to say that while I was looking into Nabokov, I was thinking, I want the chapter to have some other naturalist entomologist. And I happened to pick up a copy of Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud in Mexico. Yep. It was one of the books they had at the English Language Library. And I'd read it like three times before, and I just was flipping through it, and I came upon a chapter on Osamu Tezuka.
Oh, I love that you included him, because for people who don't know, he was the person who drew Astro Boy. And
Astro Boy, he's considered the godfather of
manga.
Manga and anime.
Yep.
And it turned out he was a huge insect fan, and his name, he called himself Osamu Mushi Tezuka for a while, because Mushi means bug, and his production company is Mushi Productions, so it's Bug Productions or Insect Productions. So that was just like a complete stumble on when I was looking for something to do in that chapter.
The wild thing about this book is, okay, and for people who are tuning in and listening to us go down the rabbit hole about insects, is that it is a real serious history of humans and insects and how insects have affected human history, as well as an evolutionary history of insects. But it's also artistically a stunning book, and you can get lost in the illustrations easily. And so I before we talk any more about insects, and I have a feeling we could really go off on a tangent on that, I have to really ask you about the artwork. What medias are you using? I know that you've used collage before. From the very beginning, you've used collage.
Yes. But this is actually because I was in the library alone, just one of the huge benefits of, you know, COVID was, as you mentioned, such a weird thing to talk positively about. But and I think this is probably for a lot of artists, you know, being freelance, it's totally unfair, but it didn't, in many ways, it didn't change my work habits. In fact, it increased my ability to work. I wasn't socializing, so all I did was work for you know, a year and a half in particular, and without much socializing. But I was in this empty library, so I was in a position to go into, say, the Rose Room. If anybody's ever visited the New York Public Library, it's just this magnificent architecture that I don't think I would have noticed as thoroughly as I did if people had been filling it up and putting their computers on desks and coats.
There's no way you could have done it. It would have been incredibly distracting too.
I would have had to, I guess, photograph it at night or something. I don't think I would have necessarily even come upon the idea. And it was the architecture was suddenly magnified by the rooms being empty. And so I photographed everything, and then I would print out my photos. I did some collaging with using actual insects, either photos of insects or my drawings of insects. And so I could really assemble the page as kind of a collage in Photoshop, and then print that out in black and white and lightbox from that, so that, you know, if I had to try to pencil.
Wait a minute, Peter.
Architecture and then ink over the top of it, I would have given up on it. But to do it from lightboxing meant that I had the general structure. And in fact, you know, if I had a shot and I didn't like the way it was fitting, I would stretch the image, bend it how I wanted. So I got, you know, I twisted it from it just being like a straight copy of the photo. And then, but even in lightboxing, you're like, I'm looking, I have light, one piece of paper, then the drawing paper on top of that. I can kind of the image, but not 100%.
Are these to size? Like, did you draw to size?
Some of them are actually to size, which was ridiculous. And then I had a kind of a, gee, I should probably work a little larger. So I started to, you know, especially when I was a multi-panel comic page. But if it was like a single image, I could do it at about a 9x12. But so I was lightboxing, and then I would, you know, say the ceiling of the Rose Room, this incredible thing. And I, if you look, zoom in really closely, which you can, which you certainly could when I had my exhibition, because what we did was we blew up the artwork on vinyl so that it was complete full wall size. And you can certainly find this online if you look up the American, New York Public Library and my name. There's photos of this, and it's around on the web anyway. And that you know, you look at that architecture, and you can see that I didn't exactly copy it. I would get swirly at some point, and I was, you know, I was as careful as I could be before I started to get bored with, you know, copying it too carefully. I wanted to have the artistic aspect of that, and the focus was the insect, so that was more important to me. But I wanted to convey the environment.
Okay, first of all, you're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is award-winning author, artist, and illustrator Peter Cooper, and we're talking about his amazing new book, Insectopolis, A Natural History. Peter, this book is also a tribute to the New York Public Library because it is such a lovingly rendered collection of drawings of all the architecture. I mean, it's an amazing space. So this is doing like three different things. Now, I got to tell you that I fell in love with the insects. What was your favorite insect to draw, but what's your favorite insect too?
Well, I get asked this a lot, and you know, among the beetles, I would have to say Ringo. it was a beetle. It's probably the dung beetle is the one that I had that. The dung beetle / scarab is such a hilarious character. You know, it's pushing poop around.
That's right.
Which just in and of itself is funny. So I have, you know, the opening scene is coming out of the toilet with a ball, and it's being made fun of by the other beetles. You know, they're like, you know, dung beetle walks in the bar, says the bartender, is this a stool taken? You know, there's just opportunity there for humor. And then the dung beetle is, of course, incensed and wants to remind everybody that it was once believed to be a god by the ancient Egyptians, and that it, you know, the scarabs are found in King Tut's tomb, and you know, all the ways that dung beetles are important. But at the same time, it helped me define these characters' voices. It's just sort of getting into the head of a dung beetle and thinking, how would the, you know, what would be the mentality of a dung beetle? They'd probably be constantly being made fun of, and then also be, you know, have a gigantic ego over their history.
Now, we're going to run out of time, and there's so many things I want to talk to you about. One of the real joys of this book is also other, like, sort of weird stuff that's in the background. Like, you have a visual sort of list of books that were important to this book. So it's incredible to have a bibliography that's drawn. And in and among that, there are some really funny things, like, you have a caterpillar eating the hungry, hungry caterpillar, which there's just so much of that shit throughout this entire book. But then there's things I really wanted to ask you about, like, so you're really passionate about spy versus spy?
Well, passionate is one way to put it. I've been drawing spy versus spy for almost 30 years.
I didn't know that because I go back to the Proheus in the Mad Magazine. Well,
in 1996, they asked me to try out for Spy vs. Spy. I had no intention of doing that. It was completely out of the blue. And I had, at the time, I had finished a book called The System that I did in stencils and spray paint, just because I was trying to confound people's assumptions of what was the correct form for a comic book. Because I was just like, I have been on a crusade to get people to look at comics and take them seriously and sort of undermine their assumptions and why they would consider it low art. So I was doing stencils and spray paint in that book and also in my illustrations. And so when they asked me to try out for Spy vs. Spy, I did it in stencils and spray paint, assumed they would hate it and be like, okay, moving on. And I would, you know, I would just say goodbye to that. And then it turned out they wanted something really different, but
that was it.
Like Spy vs. Spy. And so I was like, oh, I'll do it for a year or two. And here I am coming into my 30th year. And it's still pretty fun to do. It's it's another, you know, part of my youth that's carried through into my life.
I mean, this book has so much of you in it. It's like sort of also an autobiography. And I love the fact of the books that you drew in the bibliography. I love some of them that you included, just really, I love are books that just resonated with me, like Archie Mehetabel by Don Marquis, but illustrated by George Harriman.
Amazing little circle there. Yes. The guy who did Crazy Cat.
Harriman's one of my heroes in comic art, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm still teaching comics and he shows up quite a bit, along with Winsor McKay, for sure.
Oh, Winsor McKay.
I have a whole section in.
Well, mosquitoes. Okay. And that, this is what I mean. This is really an autobiography, too.
It is. And also, one of the reasons why I wanted to do the subject is because of my concern about climate change.
Yep.
and how much I'm noting insects disappearing.
Oh, man.
I wanted to get people to be conscious of not only the beauty of, you know, say, monarch butterflies, butterflies in general, but just the importance of insects in all aspects of our lives. That basically, you know, the grocery shelves would be empty without pollinators, and that there would be dead things all over without flies. Crazily, the second biggest pollinator is flies.
Peter, we're completely out of time, and we haven't even begun to go through my four pages of questions.
Well, we'll do part two.
We could do part two. I'd like to talk to you about drawing so many ants. My guest tonight has been author, artist, and illustrator Peter Cooper. And we've been talking about his latest book. I cannot recommend it enough. It's just stunningly beautiful and very informative. Insectopolis, A Natural History. Peter, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Mark. For me too.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.